Savion Glover is a Tony Award-winning choreographer and the greatest tap dancer to ever lace up a pair of tap shoes, according to the late Gregory Hines. At the age of 10, he starred in the Broadway musical The Tap Dance Kid. They both starred in and choreographed the musical Bringin' the Noise, Bringin' the Funk, for which he received a Tony Award for choreography. Glover has made numerous appearances on Sesame Street. This year was nominated for a Tony for his choreography in Broadway's Shuffle Along. As part of The Creative Life, a conversation series at UAlbany, produced by the New York State Writers Institute, University Art Museum, and UAlbany Performing Arts Center, in collaboration with WAMC, before a live audience at Page Hall on the campus of the University at Albany. Please join me in welcoming Savion Glover.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm feeling highly favored and blessed. How about you?
I'm great. Do you have, it seems to me that you are kind of default that way, feeling blessed and favored.
I don't know if default and blessed can even be used in the same sentence, but you're
well, meaning that you have a baseline of feeling that way, of looking at what is around you and feeling blessed that you are a part of it. I don't think all people have that.
Well, I recently decided that I really can't complain about much. I mean, I can complain about my back is in pain sometimes, or my shin sometimes becomes painful, but I just feel so happy to be alive, to be able to do what I imagine or I think I am here to do. I just have no complaints, even in my worst moments or darkest moments. I realize, well, there's nothing I could do about that, and I just try to go on. Not try, but I do. I just go on. You know, I think about all of the things that could stop me from going on, and then I just realized I'm blessed. I'm here. We all are. You know, yesterday was yesterday. Can't do anything about it. So I just move forward.
You will be giving a performance as we speak. You'll be giving a performance tonight. Is that what's paramount on your mind, or are you allowed to really live your life and then go on the stage, and that's when you can really start worrying about it?
Yeah, I take everything to the stage. Everything that I am will eventually come out through my expression, through my art. So if I have a good day, then I'll have a better performance. If I have a semi-worrisome or curious day, then I'll express that during my performance. So my approach to my art is very improvisational, as is my life. My life has just become improvisational. I like to, well, not like to, but I tend to keep people curious about me. And I like that. I don't like to think that one might be able to predict my next move. So.
Well, just for the record, interviewers love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
But also you feel like you put pressure then on, because so if I'm reading you correctly, if this interview goes great, then the performance would be better than if the interview completely sucks.
Well, it depends on what happens after the interview. Like, if I have a good meal.
Oh, great.
Right now I was checking out some of the little spots on the way up here.
Yeah.
If I have a good meal and a nice glass of something red, then it'll be a wonderful performance.
So you like a mysterious element. You like to...
Life is mysterious. We can't, you know, once, you know, I am a man of no order. I've surrendered order, being, you know, I don't, since my mother, since I moved out of my mother's house, which I was the last to go, you know, I do my own, it's my life. I have no authorities. My authority is God. My authority is creation. I make up words. I do things that everyone does who now proclaim to be in a position of authority. And, you know, I'm not like a disrespectful person. I try to maintain as much respect for human life as possible. But I just don't like to be ordered. I feel like I'm not living if someone says, oh, you must do this, you must do that, you know.
So talk to me then.
Gets me in trouble also sometimes. So I like that as well.
And you learn from that.
Yes, I do. This is what keeps me educated and keeps me on point.
Because you can understand, for want of a better term, how far you can go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I have a child now, so I'm learning. He's a little like I am, but he has a little more, you know, I think I give him more freedom as far as a disciplinarian, because sometimes he does some things and I want to get mad, but I just laugh because it's like, okay, he's already, you know, expressing himself and living his life.
How old?
He's 12. He's 12 years old, and his decisions, I mean, again, I maintain my parental guidance and I maintain my position as his father, but you know, I say, okay, if you want to do that, you go ahead and see what the consequences are. If it turns out right, for, I mean, I'm not going to let him jump off a cliff or anything, but, you know, I give him the same liberties, you know.
So the same code, basically, that you
basically
operate under.
Yeah.
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 We're speaking with tap dancer and choreographer Savion Glover. Let me get back to something that you talked about when you were talking about improvisation, because... Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're also a Tony Award-winning choreographer. I've heard you use this phrase, which I believe you attribute to Gregory Hines, which is improvography.
Improvography, yeah.
Which is this merging of improvisation and choreography.
Right.
So even in a performance, perhaps, that we would see right now from you tonight or whenever, there's a little bit of both, right?
Oh yeah, there's a tremendous room of improvisation. I have a group of dancers with me, and of course we have choreography. But even inside of the choreography, and this is because of my teachings or learnings as a child coming up dancing with these great men, I have now. Basically no choice but to incorporate room for them to do improvisation inside of the choreography. My choreography right now, for productions as, you know, for productions like this, and even for like if it's a Broadway production or anything, you know, it's like we create songs, we create a bed of music. The choreography is basically music. My approach to tap dancing is not as much visual as it is for the ear. So I like to create the sound that will allow one to understand, hopefully, and better enjoy the dance through its musicality versus the visual. Mm. I incorporate some visual, but mostly it's about the sound and allowing, again, the listener to hear the melody through the phrasing, to hear the arc, to hear the bridge, to hear exactly the rhythm versus seeing the dance. So inside of the choreography, you know, sometimes I may say, you just get there. You know where we want to wind up. I don't have the step. I have a step that I might do, but I don't want to give you that step, I might say to the dancer. So you get there, you meet me at the top of the phrase the best way you know how. And it allows them to be creative in that moment. And then we get back into the choreography and so forth and so forth. But again, I don't know if, I think you've explained it, but improvography, it's a word coined and given to us by Gregory Hines. So his ideal was to, it's like the great American English language, we have this vocabulary, we all have a vocabulary, but in which way or form, how we build the vocabulary is improvisational. We know what we want to say, but unless we write it out, we don't know how it's going to come out. So we have this vocabulary of rhythms or vocabulary of steps, but they're not done necessarily in the same order. Mm. You know, it's not always new steps, but the order in which they are presented or placed is new.
You talked about the sound a moment ago. I've heard you say, I think you were on Colbert years ago, and you said that you would love to perform before an audience of those who could not see rather yeah. than those who could not hear.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating because it tells me that it, in the best possible circumstances, which seems unlikely and impossible, but that we would be able to see you with our eyes closed and then see you and then just be able to hear you and then to have both ears and eyes open and experience everything. That would be like perfection.
Yeah, I mean, you should talk to some presenters when I present this idea to them.
Let me know, I'm here.
I try to, and I will if I have to do it myself. But you know, when I present this idea of doing a production, which I almost did, doing a production in the dark, the presenters go, "Oh, I don't know."
Yeah.
You know, they get, they become baritones. So. You know, but I will do it. I did a production called Ohm at the Joyce maybe 4 years ago or something like that. And the stage was just full of candles. It was about over 100 candles, but we didn't use any lights. And it was sort of a meditative approach to dance. But again, I believe that sound tells a story that the English language, or any language at that, for that matter, has not yet to reach or give us the opportunity to express. Like, sound allows one to react, I believe, differently than words. The tone in the matter that you use the word, you know, the infliction of the word, all of these things matter. You know, people react differently when they hear a glass breaking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If they don't see it being broken or being thrown, we all react differently to sound. So I would just like to hear how people react to the sound of tap dancing, because again, we come from the dance, we come from this visual aspect, right, of, you know, arms and got a smile and doing all this stuff. And then, again, we move to a generation of tap dancers like the Cats, who raised me in the dance, Gregory Hines, Jimmy Slide. I mean, all of these men are great at visual presentations, but they were handling so much business from the knees down that a lot of time the visual overshadowed the business. So the stories that they were telling and the things that they were trying to communicate through the dance kind of went over people's heads, I believe, until a generation, I think, that I was a part of and might still be a part of, until, you know, we decided, or I decided, I can't speak for everyone else, but, and it was an unconscious decision. You know, I remember being, for a long time, the the critics.
that was Freudian.
Sorry. The critics would criticize me for, you know, performing with my back to the audience. Not that I am in the same prestige as this guy, but the same, it reminded me of what they would say about a Miles Davis when he would perform, like, with his back to the audience. I don't know what his reasons were, but for a long time, for me, it was about connecting with the musician and not really, you know, not really presenting myself as a visual for the audience. But there were times when I need to have eye contact, and I need to be able to see what the piano player is, how he's moving, when he goes to the high keys or the low keys, or I need to see what that horn player is doing, and I can't do that if I'm looking forward. So my reasons, and the reason for that is so that I can play the music, so that I can try to do the same notes or play the same notes. I know when he's, I know the fingering of the instrument. So you try to, you know, play along with that. And, you know, it was said, oh, he doesn't care about the audience and blah, blah, blah. But I do care about the audience. I care enough that I want them to hear what I'm doing versus the visual. So it's sort of a eradication, I guess, of the mental or the mentality to have one understand that that dynamic.
This interview with Savion Glover was recorded on October 16th as part of The Creative Life, a conversation series at UAlbany. The series is a new initiative of the New York State Writers Institute, UAlbany Performing Arts Center, and University Art Museum, along with WAMC, to converse with artists of national and international prominence about their creative inspiration, their craft, their careers, and the demands of sustaining an artistic practice over time. Later that night, Glover premiered his latest work, New Sounds at the Egg in Albany. We'll be back with more from Savion Glover after this short break. Welcome back. We're joined this morning by tap dancer and choreographer Savion Glover. This interview was recorded on October 16th as part of The Creative Life, a conversation series at UAlbany.
If you got your wish and you were to perform in the dark, what would you, in your mind as you're performing, what would you see? Would that be patterns? What would you see?
I would see shapes, patterns, colors. I would see nature. I would see cosmic levels of consciousness.
And you would want us as audience members to see that as well.
Yeah.
Through the rhythm that is coming from your body.
Through the sound that is being observed. Can you see sound?
Well, I'm in radio, so I hope so.
Okay.
Right? I mean, in that way, we both want the same thing.
Okay.
I mean, the best way, when I interview people, I love to close my eyes because I want the experience that the listener has. So in that way, I think it's somewhat similar.
Okay.
So let's go further, which is the complex And it is complex. It's tap has a complex history.
Yeah.
And you, as a, and I love that you use this word, you consider yourself a contributor.
Yeah.
Also, as an educator. And I'm curious as to at what point in your life, what point in your career, that became important to you.
Which part?
The duality of performing and also educating and furthering the medium.
Yeah, I think my first Broadway show was The Tap Dance Kid. I had not known or been formally introduced to people like Jimmy Slide or Gregory Hines or Lon Chaney or Busta Brown or Diane Walker. I had not been yet influenced by John Coltrane and Ornette Coleman and Wayne Shorter. I've never even heard of such an energy as Pina Bausch. And, you know, these great contributors who seem to me that their livelihood was their art. And Tap Dance Kid was about a show. It was a show for me, which I was very, blessed and honored to be a part of. But I didn't know what it meant for me to really express myself. I was under the choreographical direction of people like Danny Daniels and his son DJ Gianti. And it was just choreography. It was choreography. So I did that. I felt great. You know, I'm 10 years old. I could relate very much to the character, the kid. But I was, you know, I had no sense of self-expression because I was doing the choreography. So then I met these great men. My next presentation was Black and Blue. And this was with all the cats. Even the musicians were like, it was just a star-studded cast of musicians, and it was a star-studded cast of actors and dancers and singers, Ruth Brown, Linda Hopkins, and all of these great contributors. And it was at that time, so now I'm maybe 12 or 13 when I am introduced to them. So it was around that time when I started to understand my position as a contributor. So it became less about entertainment and more about edutainment to me. And this outlet gave me an opportunity to express myself and also carry on the traditions, the legacies, and the stories of these great men and women who had come before me. I had a respect for them as human beings way before their artistry allowed me to understand where or how I should then respect the art of them. I was very much into them as human beings in the beginning. They were just besides my mother and my grandfather and my relatives, this next introduction of energy was like overwhelming. They were 70 and 80 when I met them, and they were just the coolest cats ever. And then they can tap dance. And it was like, wow, you know. But just hanging out and hearing them talk, hearing them express how they lived in the times that they were coming up, you know, I was also propelled at the lack of acknowledgement that these great contributors were not getting because they basically, you know, when you think about the lineage or the line of entertainers we're talking about. We're talking about, yeah, I'll go backwards. We're talking about like George Hillman, Lon Chaney, Busta Brown, Ralph Brown, Chuck Green, Jimmy Slide, you know, Eddie Brown. Those are the unsung. But then you go into like Arthur Duncan. And then you go into, well, Gregory is in that first mix.
Sure.
But then you go to a generation like Arthur Duncan. And then you go to a generation like Sammy Davis, Bojangles. And then you go forward. So all of these men played a huge role in entertainment society and allowed us to continue to enjoy some things about life. Whether we saw that through Bojangles and his stint with Shirley Temple. We enjoyed Sammy Davis Jr. from the Will Masson Trio with One Generation to his stint with the Rat Pack and all these cats. And then Arthur Duncan, who was the first tap dancer to be on the Lawrence Welk show. These guys were breaking, you know, they were paving the way for today's generation. So they were not acknowledged in my mind as much as they should have been. So that also gave me an energy or an attitude to want to represent for them. Again, it was around that time, very early on, 12, 13, 14, and then we did the movie Tap, and they were there again, and I would just morph and just change as a man, as a human being, and then also this would inform my dance to change and become about, again, education, entertaining, both, doing both through the dance. So it was very early on that I acknowledged this turn.
So let's snapshot that. You're 16 years old and you're doing Tap.
Yeah.
You're with all of these greats, many of whom that you just mentioned. What is that like for you? I mean, you're still a 16-year-old kid.
I don't, man. It's like, it's just unimaginable. It's wonderful. I mean, I felt as if, again, that's why I can't really complain much about today when I think about everything, you know, that I have been able to be a part of with these great contributors and the places that this art form has taken me and the people that I'm able to have conversations with and meet. And at 16, man, it's like, it's the old phrase, a kid in a candy store. You know, it's the best ever. I mean, I'm traveling around the world. I'm doing things that at 16, a kid from Newark, New Jersey, could never imagine.
Yeah,
it's not supposed to happen. I mean, I'm living in a neighborhood where maybe you would see a limousine around prom time. But there were limousines and things pulling up in my neighborhood. You know, packages would come to my door. It was just beautiful. I'm very, very grateful for these men and women. And I'm very just grateful to creation that I am able to have those memories.
Our guest this morning, tap dancer and choreographer Savion Glover.
Are you a sponge at that point of just trying to learn from everyone around you? And the immediate follow-up to that question being, I assume that they, seeing your talent, your young talent at that point, of wanting to share, to progress exactly the way you have described and what your wishes are.
Yes, and yes, and yes. I was, and I continue to be, in their absence. I love to learn and discover, you know, things about myself, about the world, about my art, about different approaches to art, about everything. I love to learn. And I assume that they saw that or recognized that in me. And they would, you know, hey, come here, let me show you this. And they'd show me a little bit, and now you go do what you want to do with it. And I'd come back a little 15, 20 minutes later, and I'd show them what I've done, and they'd say, yeah, that's good, but now do it this way. And then I'd show them. But they would never allow me to believe that I got it. You know, they'd say, oh, that's good. Now what you going to do on the other side? And I'd say, all right, I'll go around, come back, and try to. Yeah, that's all right. Now do it this way. Let me see what you have to come on. And this went on for years. This went on for years. And it just, you know, maybe over the past 10 or 15 years that I got that. I understood what they were doing to me. I wanted the dance. I wanted to learn moves and steps, but at the same time, I wanted to learn from them.
So times when your eyes are closed, do you ever or feel a voice say, all right, you got it? Or do you never really want to hear that?
I never really want to hear that. I always hear, Jimmy Slide, you know, I would come off the stage and people say, oh yeah, oh, that was fascinating, that was great. And then Slide will just be way up top left like this. You know, and he wouldn't say, yeah, that was good. He would just say, yeah.
Sort of nod.
Not a nod. The nod is this.
Yeah.
He would say,
yeah, okay.
With this face. The I don't frown, know if you can yeah. see this, but.
Yeah.
You know, and that meant work on it. Work on it. You can fool some people sometime, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
And that, I assume, is the best of both worlds, because from that audience you get the adulation, you get the love,
yeah.
you get the applause,
yeah,
and enough of praise, and then when you go back you realize, okay, I have to work a little bit harder to do that again to get more applause the next time.
Well, it's not, again, I wasn't into the applause. I never. And still, I am not into gaining or receiving the approval from an audience. It's the cats that I want to satisfy. I want to erase this.
I want that
to become, all right, let's go yeah. talk about it. And with several cases, that was the instance as well. But, you know, it's not, I am not doing this for the approval of one or the approval of an audience. Yes, I am in show business. I am an entertainer, which I'm thankful to be a part of that group or that body. But at the same time, I am out to share with a young person how to express themselves. At the same time, because I am a tap dancer, I am reminded to remind a generation about tap dancing. The generation who was here way before me, who was enjoying tap dancing when Sammy Davis was doing it, when Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, Ginger Rogers, the Nicholas Brothers, when tap dancing was, again, very much a visual aspect of entertainment. So I am trying to cover a lot of ground, not for the approval, but just to remind us of the dance, you know. So I get the fact that I mean, we all like an applause. You know, but that's not what I'm in it for. I would rather, versus an excitement, because a lot of times we don't know what we are applauding. It's like, what did I just see? Oh my God, that was exciting. But what was that?
But when we see you perform, and we can't imagine anyone capable of doing what you do, and I'm speaking for members of an audience, we don't know what else to do other than to erupt in applause, because we're seeing you do something that is to us unimaginable.
Yeah. But it's like, do we applaud a heart surgeon?
Depends on whether we're on the table or not.
Or do we just like, you know, say, wow. Do we applaud construction workers when they have finished this great construction? It's like, you know, system and all of these things have allowed us to react in a certain way to environments, you know, which is understandable. But at the same time, you know, I'm like a mad scientist with this. I'm like in it, you know. I'm not really concerned. I have a conscious awareness of, yes, someone may have paid nowadays $200 to sit in this front row in this theater. So I'm going to acknowledge them.
Yes.
At the same time, I'm not doing it for that. You know, I'm doing it for other reasons.
So let me ask you, and I understand what you're saying, but if you're up there and you're the mad scientist and you're going at it and you don't get the applause, is there a conscious moment where you're like, oh, Jesus?
No, because I know what to do to get an applause. I know how to get an applause. When people applaud at what I don't want them to applaud at, that's when I say, oh, wow, they are intelligent. Maybe there's some intelligence in the audience. Because, again, a lot of times, you know, when we go to theater, and this is with no disrespect to an audience, but a lot of times, maybe I shouldn't say this right now, but a lot of times, and I'll include myself, we as an audience member, we're like cows.
We're being manipulated.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And one section starts and then it's everybody, you know.
Right.
Yes. But, you know, again, I think there is also an intelligence in an audience. I've learned and realized over the years that there is, again, just some intelligent people, and intelligent in a way where they bypass or can get past the fact that, okay, there's an entertainer on stage trying to entertain me. And really, they really get into one's approach to the expression. You know, whether it's a singer or a dancer or whatever, they can see past the fact that this person is a great entertainer. And when we can see the soul being poured out of a singer, when we hear the soul being bared on that stage from a musician, when we can see that, when we can see past the facade, then we are communicating, then we have an understanding. But a lot of audience members are not there for anything deep. You know, we go to the theater. I mean, me, myself, I'm just recently, over the past 5 years, I can tell myself, okay, Savion, don't go into this movie expecting anything deep. Just go, get some popcorn, laugh. It's a movie. It's a night of entertainment. Go in the movie, Raisinets, popcorn, a lot of butter, big old Slurpee, and just enjoy the movie. Leave your brain and all of these things out, man. So now I can go see a movie like Mastermind and say, wow, that was funny.
Yeah.
You know, but it took me a while to do that. And I think that's because I've, you know, the people I've been working with, the people I've been in rooms with, it's like, if I can't get into it on another level of intellectual approach, or if it doesn't do anything to my soul. Like, I used to go to a Wayne Shorter concert and just leave and go home and have to create and be in the room, darkness, and my, just thinking about what just happened, you know, versus, okay, after the show, then you go to dinner, and then you go party, and then you go hang out, and you go talk, and I didn't know what that was. I go to theater now, I go to a movie now, and I can enjoy it, versus soon as the curtain comes down, I have to go home. I can't talk to anyone, I have to go read something, I have to stay on that energy, I have to stay on that wave. Some audiences are not, I want to say they're not even privy to that energy.
Mm.
To understand what to do or how to react after seeing something that has snatched their souls.
We're speaking with tap dancer and choreographer Savion Glover.
This realization that you've had is, as you've identified over the last 5 years, when you were choreographing Shuffle Along, which you were just nominated earlier this year, does that come in mind when you're choreographing of, okay, this is what I would like to do, and this is what the audience is going to expect?
Yes. My collaborating partner, the great George C. Wolfe, was there to remind me, this ain't noise funk. You know, this is a different approach. So again, I have people. Again, I've been blessed to be able. I have in my virtual mind or my suitcase here, I have this bag of energy, and I can look in this bag and say, I think I need a little Henry Letang now. I have that. That I can pull from. I pulled and stole so much from Henry Letang and Shuffle Along in order to present these colors, these shapes, give a visual to the audience. At the same time, there is a level of, I think, intellectual sophistication where you learn how to insert yourself, and you allow your signature or yourself to be heard in the midst of all this stuff. And those who care to look beyond that will look beyond the visual will then recognize, oh, he slid that in there. You know, you have to. There's a sophisticated way, I think, and this is what I've learned from being around just great people of the arts. You know, you have to know how to get yourself in there. Yeah, you want to get the message out, you want to entertain, but you have to put some of yourself in there, you know. And with Shuffle Along, I was able to do all things. You know, I know how to present a show. I know how to get the audience aroused. I also know how to get them curious and silent. I know how to get them thinking about themselves. I want to say it's a gift. It's like I control this,
right,
from the stage.
I don't think there's a person in this room who would disagree with you that it's a gift.
Savion Glover joined us at Page Hall in Albany, New York, as part of The Creative Life, a conversation series at UAlbany. The series is a new initiative of the New York State Writers Institute, UAlbany Performing Arts Center, and University Art Museum, along with WAMC, to converse with artists of national and international prominence about their creative inspiration, their craft, their careers, and the demands of sustaining an artistic practice over time. Later that night, Glover premiered his latest work, New Sounds, at The Egg in Albany. This interview will be posted at wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.